You're listening to Fakeologist's Audio Chat. To connect to our always-on and always-streaming audio chat, go to fakeologist.com/radio3. To participate in the chat, go to fakeologist.com/audio chat. Each day, we compress and upload the day's chat, be it big or small. Leave a quick message, do a whole show. All are welcome when it's related to fakeology. Now, on with today's audio.
All right, we're here on the fakeologist.com live stream. Frank, Ounce of Salt Per Day, is with us on the line. This is Uninstall Media, and we're testing the live stream. I hope it's coming through.
Hi, Uninstall Media. Which is your surname?
My surname is Media. Okay. And yes, yeah.
Maybe I could call you MM. Mr. Media.
Mr. Media. Well, sure. That if we're going to be very formal about it. So I just hopped into to TeamSpeak. I like to log in every now and then and just hang out for a while and see if anyone shows up. And I opened the fakeologist.com website and saw the chat there, and it looks like you were chatting with Vespa Douglas about some flat Earth related observations that you've been making. And I recently was featured on a Radio Rollo podcast broadcast, which he clipped out a certain portion where I was kind of, you know, having a bit of fun with my personal reaction to a lot of flat Earth theory. You know, I had an emotional outburst, as it's been characterized, and that's fine. You know, everything I said was in tongue firmly in cheek, as Rollo pointed out in his video. But so I guess, you know, I'm just going to address, you know, what you're pointing out, Frank, is that you've made some observations which lead you to question the globe model, but you're not exactly saying it's flat, are you?
I've got no idea what it is, really. All we can, and my view is always that we can only disprove things, not prove things. And I think that is the Popperian view, the Karl Popper view.
Yeah, I hear that. I've heard you say that before, and I actually don't know the background on Karl Popper, so I'm just going at your word on that.
So Karl Popper is said to be the father of the history and philosophy of science. He's the go-to man.
Right. Well, every authoritarian structure needs to have an ultimate authority, I suppose.
That's right. That's right. And what's your background in I mean, I haven't come across you before, MM?
My background in this realm, if one can have something that is called a background in this milieu, it's...
A background story, I think, is probably the way I'd...
Well, to get to the point, I was introduced to David Icke VHS tape in about 1999 or 2000.
Oh, wow.
Which was The Biggest Secret, if you know that one, where he kind of outlines the reptilian deal with the royal family there in Britain.
Yeah.
So right around that time, I was exposing myself to that, and also the Illuminatus trilogy and writings like that from our American counterculture people, you know, Hunter S. Thompson, William Burroughs, those types of people. As a result of seeing that early on and being questioning things, you know, I've been looking at the internet and alternative information since that time, since about 2000, 2001. So, of course, the September 11th happened, and that just kind of started a snowball, which has kept rolling into the present day.
Right. And so do you have a website and so on?
I don't have anything that I really put out except for, you know, I have a blog on Tumblr. It's uninstallmedia.tumblr.com. And I just post pictures there that I find and that I want to share with people. So it's all just pictures there. But anyone could email me at uninstall.media@mail.com. If they want to share anything with me privately, I would welcome any emails. But, you know, to answer your question about background, you know, I've been looking at all this stuff, Alex Jones, to the esoteric, to, you know, the gematria, the, you know, I listen to Contrarius, Dave Eager there on TalkShoe. You know, I've listened to hours and hours of your David Icke, Michael Tessarian, Jordan Maxwell, people talking about legal stuff, you know, Mark Stevens, that type of thing. But, you know, Flat Earth was really new to me in 2015. It was the first time I encountered Flat Earth theory.
Yeah. Well, my first introduction to Flat Earth probably came from Marcus Allen, because I used to do some talks with Marcus Allen, and he was very keen to steer people into that realm.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I heard him a couple times on some old Hoaxbusters shows or talks.
And really, I'm just more interested in the anomalies, because that's all we can pick up.
Right.
My favorite anomalies are things like tidal movements, where we know, for example, that the low tide on any one day corresponds exactly with the highest pressure at that same time of day, called the barometric effect. It unexplained completely, because if you've got the highest tide, you should also have the highest tide of air. So you should have the highest pressure, but it's in fact diametrically opposite. So all we know is that at the highest air pressure, the tide's at its lowest. So that implies that the air is pushing the tide around.
Huh. Yeah, I'd never heard that before. That's pretty fascinating. And that's actually something that we can, you know, look at and measure with instrumentation.
It's a very well-known effect. The barometric effect is just, you know, it's been known for hundreds of years. And again, something that I only came across recently. It's just an observation that doesn't get explained by planetary motion.
Like the gravitational relationship of the moon and the Earth is allegedly what causes the tides to flow
in and
out.
That's right. And people are probably not aware that the effect that we talk about in the moon is not that the moon pulls the oceans towards it, but in fact that there is a differential of the gravity effect from one side of the Earth to the other. So the model of the way the tide works is that the gravitation on the side closest to the moon is slightly higher than the gravitation on the side of the Earth furthest away from the moon. And that differential is what they say causes the tide. Same with the sun. And the way all the numbers work out, it works out that the moon applies a differential of 2/1,000,000 of a newton, and the sun applies 1/1,000,000 of a newton. These are forces that we can barely measure. You would never be able to measure it. And they are the things that's said to cause the tide. So when you do the arithmetic, it's pretty interesting, all that stuff.
Are you finding this information from U.S. government sources, or where is it, like the National Oceanic and Atmospheric?
Yeah, they're the typical sources, yeah.
Right.
I mean, if people are interested, I started to put this all together. I've got a blog as well. I'm starting to put some of those calculations and sources in, yeah. But I just find all those things extraordinarily interesting, but when you actually do the arithmetic, it doesn't quite hold water. And, you know, the other tidal movement of interest is that in many parts of the world, they only have one tide per day. Even if they're facing open water. So there's a place called Fremantle, Australia, on the west coast of Australia, that's open to the Indian Ocean, that only has one tide per day. Now, it could be because of geography.
Hold on a second, because I was born and raised in a landlocked part of the world. So when you say one tide per day, does that imply that most places on the ocean have two tides per day?
That's right, yeah. So the normal tide is 12 hours, because the moon, the shape that they say occurs is that when the moon pulls the water towards it, there's an equal amount of water on the other side of the Earth.
Right, okay.
But the Mediterranean, for example, experiences no tide, nor do the Great Lakes. They say there's a tide. It's about 2 inches.
Well, yeah, actually the state I'm in, Wisconsin, borders two of the Great Lakes, and, you know, we don't, anybody who's not directly on the coast involved in shipping or boating has never heard of a Great Lakes tide.
Yeah, so that, and the fact that the the tides correspond to, so the low tide corresponds to the highest atmospheric pressure in any one day, and the high tide corresponds to the lowest atmospheric pressure, you know, during that cycle. It's called the barometric effect. And the explanations for that are not great.
So, that is one point which leads you to question the official story of our ball model, essentially. But it doesn't necessarily lead one to conclude it's flat with a dome over it, does it?
Okay, so the situation of having an atmosphere at all, I also talk about on my blog site about the impossibility of our atmosphere being in intimate contact with the near-perfect vacuum of space. There's simply no way to reproduce that experimentally on Earth.
Right, right. I know, I get that, and that is one point that's always stuck with me about all this questioning of our cosmology, is that these... So when I look at nature, you know, I don't see domes anywhere. I don't see totally enclosed environments that are separated from their surrounding environment, right? So everything's interrelated at a certain point, I have to assume, because that's what I see in nature. So there eventually has to be this blending point between whatever our atmosphere is and whatever else is out there.
Yeah.
So that's what we're talking about.
So there has to be something which prevents the very thin gases at the, you know, at the top, if you like, the top of our atmosphere from being whipped away into what's called the vacuum of space. So the concept of a vacuum of space is at this stage, well, as far as I'm concerned, it's impossible. There's no way to reproduce it physically.
Well, doesn't a vacuum have to be contained by something?
I don't know if a vacuum has to be contained, but an atmosphere has to be contained.
Right.
You know, if you just put a bucket down on the ground and put a straw in one end and suck the air out of the through the straw, you're going to reduce the pressure inside the bucket.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, and that's, gravity doesn't prevent the air from being drawn into your lungs.
Well, here I have to admit something, is that my scientific and physics education is pitiful and poor, to say the least. So,
well, I think that's a blessing.
Well, it may be, but while I'm sufficiently unindoctrinated, I'm also completely lost when people start getting into the intricacies of, you know.
That's why all the things that I'm talking about are just simple observations. That's all.
Right, right. Well, that's what I like to look at, is, you know, observational things, because I like to observe nature. I like to spend time in nature, and I believe we can learn a lot from observing nature. So that's one of the reasons I have a problem with the mainstream pushing of the flat Earth theory, which is, you know, not even really flat Earth theory as much as it is questioning the ball. But they're saying, you know, rely on your eyes, what you can perceive with your five senses. And I agree with that to a large extent, but also it encourages people to maybe put too much faith in what they think, what they want to be true, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I agree. They're all, at the same time, believing in things is really a no-no from my point of view.
Well, yeah, and that, I've heard you say that too, and I largely agree with that, is that as soon as we're caught in belief, you know, we're playing on one side of a dialectic. We're playing in that game. We're on the chessboard as soon as we believe something. And that's something that, you know, is troublesome too, to a lot of conspiracy theorist type people, is that, you know, we want to figure things out, but we eventually realize that, our beliefs are constantly being manipulated, and a lot of our beliefs are stemming on faulty foundations. So, yeah, to be very reserved with belief, you know, maybe not throw it out altogether, but to be very reserved with it is a very valuable thing, I think.
But equally, to hear what we consider an outlandish idea and disregard it on the basis of, our sure and certain knowledge that NASA really loves us doesn't make a lot of sense either.
Well, yeah, 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 yeah. And I don't know, do you feel like, I mean, obviously NASA fakery is not getting lost in the flat Earth argument. I mean, the two are really intertwined. You can't have one without the other. But it seemed to me that, you know, the NASA, people questioning NASA was kind of gaining more momentum before this recent resurgence of flat Earth theory.
Yeah, I agree. And probably, so my view is that this particular diversion is the diversion away from where I think the action really is, and that's in people regaining control of the systems and institutions by which we all live, the political system, the monetary system. You know, my view is that those the mechanisms are still in place for real people to start to, you know, like, reinvigorate politics to benefit the hoi polloi. But really, we're being driven away from, well, led away from that by the Pied Piper, if you like, of flat Earth. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, I see that. I agree with that. And actually, I see that a lot in the alternative media. It's like, whatever your main interest is, if it's flat Earth or banking or, you know, military conspiracies, military history, or food and toxins, whatever it is, it's all gate-kept at a certain level, right? So we can pursue whatever our favorite angle is, but eventually we'll be kind of stonewalled by a certain level of misinformation and just fake stuff, unless we're able to somehow see past it.
Yeah, you know, and I don't think you're ever going to – I think we have to acknowledge we're not going to be able to see past it all, are we? I mean, for example, the view that gold and silver are real money compared to fiat currency, that just seems to divert people all over the place.
Yeah, yeah, that's one I got into early on.
Yeah, me too. And, you know, gold and silver really were only currency by the law of their day. They were made currency by a law. So fiat currency always existed. Gold and silver were fiat currency once upon a time, as were little sticks with marks on them.
Yeah, I don't know if you heard the Hoaxbusters, the currency crisis solutions, the recent audio they put out. But
I haven't heard it all. I did. What's the pricey from your point of view?
Oh, well, it was Jay and John and Chris just doing a roundtable of their favorite impressions, talking about tally sticks and the Ruby standard, and it was hilarious.
Yeah. But, you know, again, one of those things, I guess the part that I want people, you know, that I think is important is that people realize that whatever system they use to mediate the exchange of goods and services between each other, that's the most critical part of their lives in the material world as we live in it. So the most important part of their political process is to understand what their money system is, how it comes about, who controls it, and how the political process should control it.
Well, yeah, you know, Frank, I couldn't agree more. And here we are. We're not talking about our discrepancies with flat Earth theory. Now we're talking about something real and tangible that affects all of us every day, that I don't think it's beyond, you know, your average person out there to consider these types of issues, because money affects all of us, whether we think about it or not, but all of us do think about it. Not everybody thinks about whether NASA's lying to them every day, you know?
Yeah, and that's because they're sensible, aren't they? They're really interested in how much they're going to get for what they do.
Right, right. Because at the end of the day, it's a measure of our energy, of our life energy is quantified into these tally sticks and measures and gold and what have you.
Exactly. So the fundamental importance of politics boiled down is, what are we doing to create, control, distribute, and destroy whatever the monetary system is that we've chosen to use?
Yeah. Are there any alternative currencies where you live?
Well, yeah. I mean, there's all of those things. So let's say, for example, there's the Bitcoin thing going on. What a major problem Bitcoin is for us, because Bitcoin is going to actually separate entirely from the political system. I mean, to me, Bitcoin is the greatest scam of all time. What will happen is, if people move to Bitcoin currency, is that there'll be absolutely no connection between the political process and the creation of the creation and destruction of the means by which people negotiate the exchange of their goods and services. It will be a complete disaster for us.
You know, I haven't looked into a lot of what Bitcoin, the intricacies of that, but it seems like it's already, it gone through its initial peak, and now it's crested a peak, and it seems to be kind of sliding on a downhill in a sort of a, not a crash, but a relaxation, because it seemed like it started as a grassroots thing, allegedly, and then became consolidated by people who were in on the ground floor and keen as to what was going on. But now it seems to kind of be at a 2.0 level, maybe, where it's very mainstream almost. Does that, yeah. You agree with that?
Yeah. So, you know, it's the typical ebb and flow. So it's how these things are introduced by stealth, aren't they? And once you have any monetary system is really an agreement between the group of people that adhere to that particular
right
system. And they're really, if people in Australia are exchanging goods and services with Australian dollars and they're dealing with people that are on a different system, then there's a negotiation between those two people about how the systems correlate. But who is going to control Bitcoin?
Well, that's just it. I mean, at the end of the day, a lot of people want to turn it into U.S. dollars or euros, or use it to launder those currencies, maybe. You know, I don't really know how it works, but it's tied in also with this deep web idea and this idea of, you know, this dark web, whatever it is, that is anonymous, largely anonymous, and people use these bitcoins to conduct transactions of illegal goods and services and so forth and so on, and things that aren't illegal too. But so it's kind of tied in with that. And what I learned about that whole network is that the Tor, the Onion Router, all that stuff was created by the U.S. Navy intelligence a long, long time ago. So that all that was controlled from day one as well.
Yeah. So I would suggest to you that these ideas, like flat Earth and the distractions, if you like, of greenhouse gases and so on, are really about preventing thinking people from concentrating on the political system. And in fact, most of these discussions talk about the futility of politics and, well, you know, why bother? Why vote? Why do this? Why do that? Because it's all futile anyway. The real issue is the Earth flat?
Right. Yeah. No, I see that entirely. Yeah. And that is a profound question that kind of stops people in their tracks when they realize the futility of it. They're left with, it's a fork in the road. You know, what are you going to do? Are you going to go about life as normal and just accept that and say, well, I'm going to let that gang of, you know, killers, thieves, and liars do their thing because what can I do about it? Or are you going to entertain other possibilities? And that's where it gets, you know, kind of tricky.
Yeah. So I, you know, my, you know, I guess if you like, I've sort of reached the point where I think I need to concentrate on money and politics, and which is why I'm very interested in guys like Dallas Goldbug that, you know, are putting forward models about how politics is really working. And those models may be completely incorrect, but at least you can examine them and pull them apart and discard them and move on.
Right. And I understand completely why that is such a controversial issue for people. I first became aware of his website and his work, I think it was 2012, when a guy called the Celtic Rebel was doing interviews with him on the Oracle Broadcasting Network. And he had Ed Chiarini on there a number of times, and he talked about the Greenberg family and his investigations online of them. And I was very intrigued by it all. You know, the Tina Fey, Sarah Palin thing, that's where he started to lose me, when he said that what's-her-name from the Golden Girls is the Queen Elizabeth II. He lost me with that. But I think he was, you know, probably presenting some amount of truth, because, you know, it resonated that way with me that, yes, there is this cast of political media operatives who are in a world that we just don't understand. you know, and they operate in ways that we can't even comprehend because we were raised with Mr. Rogers and Sesame Street and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I think it's the most important aspect of what he's saying is that you can stand for candidacy just on the vouchsafe of a second person. That is a ridiculous situation if it's true. And it seems to be proven to be true on the basis that... On the basis that a wrestler was a governor of one of the states in the USA and just used his wrestling name to remain governor. Yeah. Jesse Ventura.
Jesse Ventura, Minnesota, one of my neighbors here in the upper Midwest, yeah.
And he signed, apparently, his bills, Jesse Ventura.
See, I find that funny because in order to vote, in order to be a registered voter, you have to present a legal document like a bill from your electric company or a water bill that says your name and address and this is your billing address. They have to know who you are financially and physically in order for you to vote for these characters.
Yeah. So it's, that kind of situation, is really where, you know, I guess my view is that people not taking the time and the care to safeguard the institutions that we allegedly have, and at this stage, you know, whether we really have them or not is irrelevant. If we're told we have them, then it makes sense to at least test the mechanism. And at the moment, you know, we're not safeguarding, if you like, our democratic rights in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, yeah. It's as soon as you try to get involved with political activism, you're pretty much falling right into the arms of controlled opposition groups, and this is something I've learned with firsthand experience.
So again, coming back to where I think the model that Ed Chiarini's put forward is very interesting, is that he is providing a possible mechanism to undo some of the damage that's being done. That is, by requiring that people that stand for office actually use their legal birth name.
That's just because of who it's coming from. Because that's coming from Ed Chiarini, I can see that being very difficult for some people to process. But, you know, I don't find anything necessarily disagreeable with that premise.
So, you know, in the end, it doesn't matter where the information is coming from. You don't have to disclose where you think the information is coming from. All that has to be confirmed, is it true or is it not true that you can stand for office without showing your real name, without disclosing your real name, without proving that you are, by birth, the person you claim to be? For example, is Barry Satoru or is he Obama?
He is hope and change personified.
Maybe, but you know, in the end, that's completely unimportant to, you know, getting this very, very simple modification made to our world, to our democracy, if such a thing exists.
That would be a very interesting a premise for a documentary film. If somebody wanted to run for a local office with a false identity and just be totally candid about it and document the process.
Well, isn't that what Jesse Ventura did?
I suppose it is, because Jesse Ventura is not his real name. I don't know his real name offhand, but yeah.
If I'm wrong about that, I'd like to know. My understanding is that Jesse Ventura went into office as Jesse Ventura and signed the bills as Jesse Ventura.
Yeah, he also did some television spots while he was governor. I think he was on The Daily Show. And they had one of the correspondents go visit him at his governor's mansion, and they went out in his backyard and shot some semi-automatic rifles.
Yeah, etc.
So, yes, so people like him. Actually, Minnesota also had Al Franken as a U.S. senator. Al Franken from Saturday Night Live.
And is that Al Franken? Is that his name?
That's a good question.
So it sounds like there may be a couple of data points which confirm that you can stand for office without your birth name. So that the advantage of that is, of course, that how do you get taken to court? You know, how can you be held legally responsible for your actions if everything you've done is on the promise of not your legal identity anyway? So I didn't do anything wrong. I've signed it under this comical name that I've got.
And I suppose that sort of presupposes that the judicial system as a whole has merit. Because if it could be said to righteously prosecute somebody who was committing such a fraud, then that imbues that system with a kind of authority that maybe it shouldn't have.
Well, but let's be honest. If we're all playing the game, you know, the part that I did hear of Chris Kendall's call was where he's talking about Monopoly and Monopoly money. Whatever the rules of the game are, they are the rules of the game. If we want to change the rules of the game, that's the action we have to take. If currently one of the rules of the game are that when you use these names that you're subject to court action, and that when you don't use these names, you're not, well, that's just, you know, we either accept that rule or we do something about it.
But can you change the rules of the game? When you take Monopoly out of the box, can you change the rules? Yeah, you can try, but your co-player might tell you to fuck off, you know?
Yeah, so that's, I guess, the real, if you like, where I think the diversion is away from what are the rules of the game and what action should people be taking to do that. So, you know, for example, in that case, even if you don't change the rules of the name, the name rules, what you can do is at least do your best to not vote for people that aren't prepared to stand up and say who they are. Now, so that's what I'm talking about in people safeguarding their democracy. Even if the rules are not changed, you can say, well, that candidate there is not using his real name. That guy's saying he's Jesse Ventura. Why are we electing a cartoon character? That doesn't make sense. I mean, people may still choose to elect Jesse Ventura, the cartoon character, but then at least we know what we're doing to our, you know, we're deliberately choosing to flush our democratic rights, whatever they are, down the toilet. But what I'm suggesting to you is, in the main, I think most people will choose only to vote for candidates that really put their name forward.
Yeah, that would be ideal, yeah. And it brings up the question, like, who is Donald Trump, for example? Just that question. Who is Donald Trump? I would posit that there are probably three Donald Trumps. There's the Donald Trump who exists in the mind of the public now, running for president. There's a Donald Trump who existed before that as a reality TV star on The Apprentice and as a real estate, you know, mogul, New York, all over the United States and the world. And there's the real Donald Trump who exists above those other two Donald Trumps and is the puppeteer of them. So, I mean, it gets into these layers. Like, is there anybody in Australia who compares to Donald Trump as a politician or a television star in that same category?
I don't think so. But they're all, I mean, really, they're all media performers, aren't they? The ones that you see on television are the media performers. We don't see anything other than the main players interviewed on television. There are, you know, there might be 100 right now. Was there like 150 members of the Australian Parliament? And the ones that, you know, get to talk about things are very limited. You know, all the media presentations are very tightly controlled.
Yeah.
But I guess the other problem with what goes on in the USA is that the system there is also very indirect. For example, my understanding of a US presidential election is that you actually vote for someone who then gets to vote for someone. And that person you vote for changes their mind. For example, if you're trying to vote for Donald Trump, you vote for a candidate in the collegiate that says he'll support Donald Trump, and then that guy goes somewhere and votes for Donald Trump.
Right, the Electoral College, yeah.
So that whole system is designed as far as I can get, that must be the least democratic system I've ever come across. I'm not quite sure why the U.S. is held up as the paragon of democracy.
Right. No, it sounds like you understand it about as well as I do, to be honest. But I know that once you learn about the Electoral College system, it propels your understanding to a new level, because if you have eyes to see, you realize that that is the major mechanism by which they swing every election, because you can have a candidate get a majority of the popular vote in a given state, But the way that state is gerrymandered and its districts are carved up, you will have one candidate getting more electoral college delegates than the other, regardless of the popular vote. So, like we've seen, even in the mainstream media, they say, you know, Bernie Sanders got this percentage more than Hillary Clinton in this state, but Clinton got more electoral college delegates because that's how we carve it up. And they just kind of like dangle it in your face like it is rigged, not even talking about the voting machines and the electronic fraud that's been happening in the last 20 years.
And I don't understand why they would you would even need to have voting machine fraud, because it's
yeah, it seems superfluous at this point.
And you know, again, is it another red herring? We're really just talking about the very fundamental things that I'm just talking about. You know, being fully cognizant of the tools and mechanisms by which our world is run, you don't have to get into worries about what's fraud and what's not fraud. What you need to do is understand the very basics of how money is created, who creates it, who's responsible. You know, for example, everyone talks about the US government being in debt, but to whom are they in debt? You know, the US government can create as much US currency as it wishes, but they simply don't do that. Now, how can a whole world that's prepared to accept US dollars, how can the US government be in debt to anyone when it can simply create whatever number of US dollars it wants to? None of that is logical, is it?
No, it's not. And yet we have Alex Jones and people like that, you know, saying, well, China owns all our debt, and, you know, we're all at the behest of the Chinese now. And
so why does he say that when the amount of – I can't remember the numbers, but I think it's very low. I think Chinese ownership, you know, the amount of debt the Chinese have is maybe 10% of U.S. debt.
I don't know for sure, but I would tend to think that it goes back to the banks of Europe more than the Chinese, definitely. And
but even – yeah, I mean, wherever it goes, I mean, the point being that, as far as I know, not only the Chinese government, but every Chinese – equivalent of a state, whatever they call them, province or canton, is hugely in debt to someone. People are probably not aware of that.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, I mean, were they building, you know, what about those ghost cities? Were they working on debt to build those ghost cities?
Well, I don't know, and we don't even know if those ghost cities exist, because they were all on rents, weren't they? So.
Right. That seems like a pretty fantastic story, doesn't it? Just oh, yeah, they just built all these cities because that's how the economy works. You know, I mean, I don't know.
And Jim McKinney, who says he's in China, I don't know, but he was another contributor on Marcus Allen's show. He says that that story about the hoax about the ghost cities is not true. There are people living in those cities. So,
yeah, I mean, I'd believe it. If there was all these buildings unoccupied, you know, why wouldn't people move in? Or maybe they've been there the whole time.
But again, what do we don't know. Their population must have been in rapid decline while they only had the one child policy and the aging, etc.
Have you ever been to China?
Yeah, I've been there quite a few times. Three or
oh,
four
really?
Times. Yeah.
Oh.
But it's like going to a different place every time you go.
Were you in the major cities or somewhere?
I've traveled through the country, up through some of the larger mining towns, but also in Beijing and Shanghai, Guangzhou, and then up to places like Anshan.
Oh,
wow. The country.
Was that part of your salt work?
Well, actually, I'm a mining engineer, so yeah, it was part of both salt work and part of I worked for a Chinese mining company at one stage.
Oh, that's I'm fascinated by rural China, especially, not so much the cities, but just
well,
the reality.
I never really got to the rural part of China, really, because that's really kind of in the northwest, if you like, and I've really only traveled through the northeastern part of rural China.
Hmm. Have you been to the Great Wall?
Yeah.
Do you think it's as old as they say it is, or was it made 100 years ago?
Yeah, exactly. Well, they've rebuilt it. You know, they openly say we've restored it.
So right. that's the same thing with Stonehenge. They openly, there's a guy from Cambridge who openly admits that the Stonehenge stuff was all part of a restoration. And, you know, I think there's lots of documentary evidence to suggest that Stonehenge existed well before the 1800s. Yes, we've got a caller on line 7. Nope, that was Frank's phone. But, yeah, I was going into the Stonehenge being fake bit related to the Great Wall in that, you know, these places have been restored. It's not a huge secret anymore. And just because they were restored doesn't mean that they were constructed in their entirety at the time of restoration. So let's keep that in mind when we want to call fakery on a lot of these ancient or so-called ancient monuments. And it appears Frank has an alarm or some sort of reason to remain muted for extended periods. So I'm going to take this opportunity to take a little break and come back in a few minutes and perhaps continue this chat.
Are you receiving? Over.
And we're back in the live stream, fakeologist.com. Aberrato will kindly edit out all the silence here in our broadcast. We're here with Frank, an ounce of salt per day, and your blog.
And we're singing the sounds of silence.
Please.
And in the naked light I saw 10,000 people, maybe more. Beautiful song.
That is a good one. Yeah, I used to listen to oldies radio in the late 80s, early 90s, and they played all those 60s, 50s and 60s songs, actually.
Presumably, it's still going. Gold 104 or something?
Well, now the same station plays songs from the 70s and 80s. Those are the oldies now. From the 70s and 80s, those are the oldies now. So all that other stuff is going to be like ragtime music and reduced to, you know, 78 RPM records.
I'm intrigued that you have the same cadence as Freeman.
Freeman Fly, yeah. You know, I've listened to a lot of Freeman, and I understand the resemblance. I do, yep.
Are you from the same part of the world?
Well, he's from Kansas. I'm from further north than east, but more or less, yeah. Although I wasn't raised by Florida Freemasons, allegedly.
You weren't?
Nope.
And your father wasn't in the military as well?
Well, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't fit in with that Laurel Canyon crowd, necessarily. But please state the URL of your blog. It's howtotakecareofyourpenis.something. I forget the exact URL.
.wordpress.com.
All right. So
it's a remarkably controversial name for some reason. Penis obviously is a very bad word, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I see it. People like to graffiti sort of phallic references on road signs. So yeah. It's a cathartic sort of ejaculatory forbidden word, yeah.
Yeah, intriguing.
So what's your experience with Freeman and his output there with Freeman TV and all that?
I guess the most vivid one that I've got is the Akhenaten clone.
Right, yes, Obama is Akhenaten, right.
Yeah, and his introduction to the numerological stuff is fun, and the use of Egyptian symbols by the large corporate companies as their corporate logos.
Well, he one-upped at Turini on that, I think. He just kind of took that ball and slam dunked it and smashed the backboard with that.
The corporate symbol stuff.
Well, the Obama as Akhenaten being a genetic clone from an Egyptian priest king, yeah.
And the other guys that are really sort of throwing the hammer around there are the trans investigators, aren't they?
Yeah, I've heard other fakeologists reference like Jungle Surfer doing that, yeah. And I haven't looked at his videos, but I know exactly like it's Michelle Obama. Might be a man, this whole agenda being pushed. Yeah, I'm fully aware of that.
And there's a really interesting guy called Johnny Davis who basically says that all the famous women are men and all the famous men are women. He says Donald Trump is a woman.
Oh, yeah. I don't know if I could go that far, but I haven't looked at Johnny Davis. So maybe I could be convinced. I don't know.
Well, it's not about being convinced. That's why when I say to you before about all of these things that just sound ridiculous and implausible, they're easily disproved, aren't they?
Well, that's
I'm not quite sure why people call it disinformation. I mean, it's a piece of the models that people are putting forward, and you know, until we can disprove them, you've really got to be open-minded about it. I mean, it is a pretty wild situation that people are in now.
I like misinformation better as a term. I prefer misinformation because there's no end to the kind of information that could be designed to mislead us.
Well, right? So if I may just step back again, the idea that some such a person is a tranny or not a tranny is just a model. It's not really a piece of information, not really a piece of data. It's just an idea that's presented. You know, the data is something that we can confirm. You know, the sun is in the sky.
Right.
You know, I'm okay with accepting the sun is in the sky. You know, I don't have to go much further than that. I don't have to try and convince myself that it's a fraud. It might not be the sun, might not be what we're told it is, but the sun is in the sky. I'm okay with that. You know, when I put my hand on a cup, I'm okay telling myself that's a cup.
Right, right. Yeah, and I don't need to see receipts from Bruce Jenner's plastic surgeon to know that whatever was going on there was a massive part of a massive fraud. And I like the idea that I've seen come out recently, which is that he never underwent any kind of transformative surgery or any transformation whatsoever. Well, he always was a woman. No, I mean, I think the point is that he always was a man and that there was some sort of body double imposed in all the media.
Sure. That's a great one.
Mean, that's equally as plausible as that he always was a woman, right?
So the net effect of all these things is that we simply don't know. And that's why I say fundamentally, you know, in terms of until you know who a person is, you know, you've got to accept that they may not be entirely the truth.
Yeah, and that's just it. That is it. Because all these politicians put before us, you know, how often do you get to meet them face to face and spend extended periods of time with them talking about life and all these type of things? You know, no, we don't get those opportunities. They happen at stage press conferences where we get to shake their hands and exchange a couple platitudes for 2 seconds and that's it. And then we just get a media constructed personality presented for us as to who these people are.
So the whole idea of a community vouchsafing has been lost.
Right.
We don't know their grandmother. We don't know anything about them.
This is something I talked about with Chris on Hoaxbusters almost a year ago now, and that he brought up this great point in that in tribal societies everybody knows about other people, you know, at least the basic facts and their kind of life story, right? But we don't get that. But yet we are supposed to elect these representatives of us who we have no connection to whatsoever. It's just absolutely ridiculous.
And I guess the other favorite part that I have of Chris's discussions are the basis on which those people are then supposed to be able to have control over us, or you know, in other words, the way that what he calls the powdered wig men get to decide that a penalty can be imposed upon us, or you know, people don't even comprehend the basis under which the various institutions have authority over them, how that's come about.
Right.
You know, when did we sign the contract, as Chris would say?
Yeah.
I was never
presented with the option. Never presented with the option to sign off.
And so you don't believe those views that we are presented with the option?
Well, ostensibly, it's your vote. That's essentially your signature on the contract, I think.
Yeah. Well, it's also, Well, but it's interesting. Anyway, so that kind of understanding, the basic thinking about what it is, how these institutions come about and what they're based on, just doesn't occur. So there used to be classes called civics, I understand, where these sort of things took place. It's been well and truly lost.
I did have a civics class in eighth grade, which is before high school. It's our preparatory year for the high school years. And we had a civics class, but actually, funny enough, in our civics class was a cardboard cutout of President Bill Clinton. We had a cardboard cutout, a life-size cutout of, well, I'm sure it wasn't life-size. It had to be smaller, but nevertheless, it was a cardboard cutout of Bill Clinton. And we learned about the three branches of government and how they're all nobly upholding their constitutional authority and blah-bitty, blah-blah-blah.
Yeah, and it could be true one day. I mean, if the system worked as we were told, it would be fantastic.
Yeah, I see that point. Yeah, yeah. It could be a good thing.
The amount that gets achieved, even though it's completely perverted, always amazes me.
Well, right, and this brings up another point that I always have to remind myself of is that government only makes new laws. They never repeal old laws, right? Like, they never do a house cleaning of the old books and statutes that are no longer relevant. They always just add new ones to modify the old ones or to create entirely new, you know, scandals and schemes or whatever. But it's always a constantly addition, you know, additive system. It's never subtractive.
Never. And I think some of the laws that are brought up are kind of fascinating, and what would make someone wake up one day and say, oh, like they have in Australia, we're going to ban 4,000 plants from people's gardens.
Oh, because they're invasive or whatever?
Well, I don't know what the basis was, but it turns out that most of them contain DMT, apparently.
Oh, wow. Huh.
There is, you know, they're native, many of them are native Australian plants.
Yeah, I know there's like a grass, a kind of like marsh grass that contains it that will grow there and things like that.
Yeah. So I can't imagine that you know, any genuine person would wake up one morning and say, oh, look, we're going to make this law to ban native plants from people's gardens. You could imagine if it was introduced species or something, but none of it really makes sense.
Right, yeah. Oh, that's interesting.
And we don't even know that those laws, most people have got no idea that those laws exist. And as was pointed out on Hoaxbusters the other day, I didn't quite interpret it the same way that you did, I think, Jay, some of the stuff you, or maybe I, there is some parts of it I haven't heard. But the way that, you know, these intricate legislative packages, hundreds and hundreds of thousands of pages of legislation, can be produced within days of events occurring that no one could possibly read or understand.
Right, yeah.
You know, these are the things that I would hope that we should now start focusing on, as opposed to, you know, worried about what the shape of the earth is, really.
Yeah, yeah. Why is it that we have 5,000-page documents prepared on a several days' notice for our representatives to read and understand before they vote on?
Yeah,
yeah,
it's incredible.
That right there is one question enough to to make people, you know, very suspicious about the way things are going. And there was something else you brought up, but I lost the point I was going to make.
Okay, I'll stop talking as much then.
No, that's fine. Yeah, it was before the part about all this legislation that comes up. Well, it was. Before I was referring to a recent Hoaxbusters audio that was just posted that was separate from the last call on Monday night. So maybe that's what, yeah. But that's where they were talking about the economic situation in a fairly comedic fashion, which I enjoyed thoroughly.
Right. And what is the economic situation?
What is the, well, it's whatever people want to believe it is, I guess. But, I mean, like we said earlier, I believe that whatever currency we use is a measure of our life energy. So whatever kind of system we can initiate to better reflect that understanding and enhance relationships with that understanding would be better than what we have now.
Yeah. And are you working? Do you Are you in a job?
I kind of work for myself. I do several different jobs, mostly related to like outdoor, you know, landscape and orchard work, things like that. I've worked on, you know, vegetable farms and done carpentry and things like that. I don't like to, I've never had an office job with a desk.
Right. So when did you make that decision?
It wasn't really a decision I had to make. It was just natural to me. I mean, so I guess I've always just been that way.
So you can weld and...
You know, I haven't done welding. I know people who can. I know blacksmiths. There's kind of a renaissance of blacksmithing happening, which is very cool.
Yes, there is, isn't there? I've noticed that.
Yeah. There's guys, you know, they got their shops and their forges, and they'll make door hinges, handles, all kinds of things. Knives, you can learn how to make your own pocket knife to, you know, do whatever you want with. Be a vegetarian or vegan or be an omnivore and gut your fish. You can do it all with your handheld knife that you made in a forge.
Yeah, incredible. And what's your thoughts on the purpose of phones?
The purpose of phones? As in cell phones or...
Yeah, you know, the handheld computers, the interconnected devices we have now. But the Samsung, I think they're up to the Samsung 7 or something.
Yeah, well, I think that they are designed to separate us from reality, essentially, or to indoctrinate us into a new reality. And that's my true thought on the subject. And as far as the health aspects, you know, I have felt disturbing pain in my skull from using an old cell phone. So I believe that the health concerns are very valid for this technology, and especially Wi-Fi.
I think most people are not putting them to their ears anymore, by the way, for that reason. I think most people must be feeling that.
Yeah.
I would suggest most people are reluctant to put the phone to their ear.
Well, it's even in the – I don't have an iPhone, but I've heard that it's in the manual that you get with your iPhone that it's recommended you hold it away from your head. You talk, you know, into the mouthpiece, holding it in front of your mouth and use the earbud. You know, I heard secondhand that that's actually in the manual for the iPhone. So.
Wow. Be interesting to confirm that, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
I wonder if I can do that while I'm here. I should be making salt, but I'm thinking about iPhone close to ear.
Well, yeah, I never had a cell phone until 2 years ago. I got my first cell phone 2 years ago, and it was an old kind of phone. And I just got a smartphone last year, so I've been hesitant to embrace this new technology for, you know, largely for the reasons that most skeptics will lay out, that it's overall, it's probably not a good thing for us as human beings, even though it makes our consumer lifestyle ever so convenient. It ultimately may not be for the best.
Right. And that's how I think about, you know, like digital currency. And in fact, the banks are moving to digital currency and so on, is that really you're losing, you know, we talked about you know, how it's value for the work you've done, and you've got no way to control that value anymore once you go all electronic. It's all completely out of your hands.
Yeah, you'd have to closely monitor the hourly, daily records to make sure you weren't getting scammed.
Yeah. Just going back to the iPhone 4 thing, I found this on a website called iddownloadblog.com. It says this, Apple iPhone 4 Important Information Guide. For optimal mobile device performance and to be sure that human exposure to RF energy does not exceed the FCC, IC, and European Union guidelines, always follows these precautions and instructions. When on a call using the inbuilt audio receiver in iPhone, hold the iPhone with the dock connector pointed down towards your shoulder to increase separation from the antenna. When using iPhone near your body for voice calls or for wireless data transmission over a cellular network, keep iPhone at least 15 millimeters away from the body and only use carrying cases, belt clips, holders that do not have metal parts that maintain at least 15 millimeters separation between the iPhone and the body. Wow. Pretty clear cut, isn't it? I've lost contact.
Hello?
Can you Can you hear me? Am I? Is it me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Am I still there?
Yeah, I can hear now.
All right. Yeah, I mean, why would they give it to us if it wasn't safe? Who would allow this technology to get out if it wasn't safe? I just can't believe that would be happening.
But we could say that about cars, couldn't we? I mean, cars kill 10,000 people a year in the USA.
Right. Yeah. I mean, well, like I said, I mean, when I responded to your question initially, it was that these technologies are being used to introduce us into a new reality and to anchor this new reality that is screen-based. This whole thing about people looking at screens is a very recent development, and it profoundly reflects, you know, our understanding of reality and affects our understanding of reality.
Yeah, and I'm definitely in that category as a, you know, a screen viewer. But, you know,
right.
I think we all are.
No matter how much we try to resist it, it's kind of unavoidable, it seems.
And maybe that's what this website is about. For the people that won't watch the television, they've got this.
Yeah, that's fine by me. That's good. Good thing to participate in, really, I guess, you know.
Yeah. So if you had your druthers, would you uninstall media?
All I can do is work on myself. So, yeah, I mean, I've been trying to do that. And luckily, it's just come naturally because I haven't found myself entertained by a lot of media in the last 10 years or 15 or so.
Wow.
So I just found myself increasingly unamused by everything I was seeing, and it just... It starts to make sense when you look at the work that people like Jan Irving and Joe Atwill are doing. I mean, I feel like those guys are a crucial piece of what we're talking about here. And if people out there aren't listening to them, they need to be, absolutely, because they're really laying out all the connections with the intelligence agencies, Tavistock, and culture creators in the last 40, 50 years.
I'm highly dubious of the reality of the Joe Atwill character, I must say.
Well, that's fine by me. I'm suspicious of everyone, even Jan Irving and Joe Atwill, and that's to certain degrees. That's just something I maintain for myself is a little bit of suspicion always.
Do you think the CIA exists?
Do I think the CIA exists? Well, not like the Jason Bourne CIA. No, I don't believe that CIA exists.
So what do you think exists?
More likely, probably a conglomeration of three-letter, four-letter acronym agencies we've never heard of.
Right. And do you think they're... So presumably there's an FBI and people go there.
Yeah, you can get a job there, yeah.
What do you think those people do?
I think a lot of them do footwork, you know, boots on the ground type, knocking on doors, that kind of thing.
Right. And do you think people get a job at the CIA?
Well, it seems that way, but honestly, I don't think I'm knowledgeable enough to truthfully answer that question.
Okay. Yeah, I know ASIO in Australia advertised for people to come and work for them.
Well, the thing about compartmentalization is you can work for, say, NASA and be a secretary or a janitor or a low-level lab technician who just works on widgets and sends them off to some place that, you know, may be a phony address. You know what I mean? So compartmentalization factors heavily into this conversation in that there can be low-level employees of any organization who don't really know exactly what's going on higher up the ladder.
And so what do you think the higher up the ladder is?
Well, it seems that they whoever is in those positions executing those agendas that are appropriated to them or, you know, it seems that they rely on deception as their number one tool.
And do you have a view that are they humans?
Probably. I mean, I don't have any reason to believe they're not human, but...
Okay, so
I'm open to alternatives. Look, I grew up with David Icke. All right, I'm open to alternatives.
Okay, well, the reason I ask that is simply because I just wonder the scheme that goes on seems to be quite long term.
Well, yes, it seems that the view is longer term than most of us can comprehend or are trained to comprehend in our day-to-day lives. Yeah, yeah.
And they certainly seem to be longer than, you know, a single lifetime. You know, the broad sweep, it looks like these schemes have gone on for thousands of years. Certainly, well, the 400 years of documentation at least.
Right, yeah. That's why I was... This is the main reason why I'm particularly intrigued by Michael Tesserian and all his work. And, you know, I wouldn't say that I'm an acolyte or would necessarily recommend his work to anybody, but his output is pretty fascinating in the sense that he synthesizes a lot of sources from the past and tries to connect dots throughout long spans of time.
Yes, and I'm familiar with my. He was one of the first people, I guess, that I sort of came across. But having seen him, I became a little bit dubious of him. But at the same time, what is his basic thesis? How is this long-term plan kept alive?
Right. Well, his basic thesis, I think, is that it does go to, you know, non-human entities, and that's what he said years ago. I don't think he says it as much now. But that's what he was saying back, you know, 2005, 6, 7, 8.
And what's your view? What's your view? Do you think the information can be just passed down lifetime to lifetime? You know, what makes the bad guy's son want to be a bad guy?
Yeah, that is the question. And it seems, you know, for us, from our level here on the ground, like it's all tied into their survival instinct. As this instinct we have to survive in the natural world, wherever we got that from, you know, it's there, right? So money is tied into that now. Money is tied into that. It's the fiat currency. So our survival instinct is tied to this system of the fiat money and everything that it entails. And that could be the same, you know, mechanism that could convince a person to do what could be considered evil acts, is that their survival depends on it.
So you think the children of the perpetrators are able to be consistently convinced to continue doing what their forebears did?
Could be in some cases, yeah, could be. But then you get into the question, well, you know, you're saying that there's somebody who are labeled the perpetrators. Who are the perpetrators? Are we not perpetrating a lot of shit on ourselves?
Well, okay, so that was really the question I was asking. Do you think there are perpetrators, or do you think that this is just a natural consequence of the human condition?
Yeah, I'm undecided on that question. Definitely okay. Undecided. Yep.
And
I think there's both. I think there's both. There, we perpetrate a lot of things on ourselves, and there are people or entities who want to take advantage of that as well.
So I would put forward the view that we are certainly beguiled into doing that, and that's why I've sort of come to the conclusion, not really a conclusion, but that's why I think the Bible provides a very good model for what we see going on.
How long have you studied the Bible? Were you raised Christian?
No, certainly not. I was raised as quite the reverse of that. I probably have only taken interest in the Bible in the last three or four years, say.
I tried. I think I read through the first few, maybe halfway through the copy of the Bible that I had. I didn't finish reading it, and that was a long time ago. So, I was definitely not raised Christian, but I'm intrigued by what that book is and the references and the way it's related to a lot of this information we're talking about. And that's why I like to listen to Dave Eager, Contrarius.
Yeah. No, me too. I really enjoy his stuff, and I like to get on air and talk with him every now when I get the opportunity. Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. He's really good, you know, person to talk to in that way. Like, he really, you know, opens up, as he always says, the conversations get better and better as they go on, and it's definitely true. I've heard you on there with him before. Yeah, I appreciate it. It's good stuff.
So that you know, that particular aspect is the one that I think is of interest to me, is who are the, what I call the, you know, whatever we really, I think underlying everything we've talked about, 9/11, the money system, everything that we've spoken about, implies that we are thinking that there are someone who's gaining from it, and that those people gaining are the perpetrators of the deceptions that are taking place.
Yep.
I don't get the impression from you that you necessarily think there are perpetrators.
Okay, well, I mean, there definitely are perpetrators of certain things. I don't want to be unclear about that. Like, you and me aren't going out there planning fake media stories. These things come from somewhere.
Yeah.
Right. So, okay. We've established that baseline, I hope.
Okay. All right, well, that's good. So then the second part comes in, is it does seem to have occurred over an extraordinarily long length of time. And I guess the analogy I make here is that I've said this to Ab. You know, if you have a line of 100 people and you say something to the person in the front row, at the start of the line, and ask them to repeat that to the next person, by the time you get to the 100th person, the message is pretty scrambled.
Sure, yeah.
But this message of how to run the world, seems to be able to remain not only unscrambled, but incredibly effective over a time span which is obviously longer than a single person's lifetime, what we consider to be a single person's lifetime. What are your comments on that?
So you're saying the Bible addresses that issue specifically?
Well, I'm just, before I even get to the Bible, before we even think about the Bible, the most interesting thing to me is, what do you think of my logic?
Yeah, no, I follow it. I think it's fascinating, and I agree with, you know, a lot of it. I think that it seems to be this long game, as I would refer it to. It's a long game, and it's longer than many of us would like to imagine. It didn't start in the late 50s. It didn't start with the British invasion. You know, the study of modern culture is absolutely necessary, but it's only the tip of the iceberg, I feel like, that goes further back than we can really, you know, pull together all the information. It can take a lifetime of study to understand how history is crafted, right?
And what are your thoughts on my view that model, that ability to do that couldn't really have been done just through the passing of information across generations?
So you're implying some sort of outside mechanism, like through ritual communication with extra-dimensional entities, or...?
Well, I'm just implying that there is an entity controlling it, which has a lifespan far greater than the standard human lifespan. Let's give it 100 years.
Yeah, no, sure. You know, 9,000 years. Why not? Yeah, you know, I can follow that.
What do you think of my logic that the entity there's an entity that's controlling things that has a longer lifespan than that of a normal man, or what we consider to a normal man?
I will not dismiss it out of hand. I will say that I won't dismiss it out of hand.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, when I'm just now really just going on the basis of just straight logic. On the basis of straight logic, that we know messages get scrambled in the handing down from one to another, but I don't see how it's possible that a long-term plan could be executed on the basis of the normal human lifespan. So I'm really open, and I guess that's really the key issue that I have with people, for example, like Kaham. Kaham's view is that these are just corrupt people working for money, and I just don't see how that ties in with the very clear view, to me, an absolutely obvious situation that the situation we're living in now has been generated over, as I said, at least 400 years, possibly thousands of years, depending on your view of history. You know, the various moves that have taken place all look very clearly coordinated to me.
Yeah, that is a large point of separation where it's, you know, I've been in that view before as an anti-war activist and, you know, fledgling sort of liberal thinker that it's all just greedy people who want to get as much as they can from the system while they can before they die and that type of thing. But I've always had this underlying suspicion that there is a larger motive that transcends generations, which has the long-term view in mind always, that is consistent. And it's been ramping up since the beginning of our recorded history that we know of, because all of our recorded history is fed to us by the hand that feeds us.
Well, so I would argue that the creation provides everything that feeds us, and that this hand that you talked about seems to be trying to get in the way between what should happen and us feeding.
Yes, yeah, I agree with that statement. Absolutely, yeah. The middleman, it's the proverbial perpetual middleman.
The middleman, yeah. Mr. 10%.
Right. Hey, look, I'm here, and I know how I can scam 10%, so I'm going to do that. So
yeah,
you're just going to pay it, all right? That's how this works.
Yeah. Yeah, and I guess that's, where I'm at, for want of a better word. And that's the model that I think, when I talked about the Bible providing a model which explains that, that really comes straight from the Garden of Eden story of Genesis.
All right, yeah. Okay, so I understand that you think there's that aspect to the Bible, but that's also the same reason I have problems with the Bible and Christianity, is that there are all these false middlemen, or, middlemen who want to jump in between an individual and their relationship with God or spirituality or the planet, whatever they want to be connected with on that level. There are always agents who want to slip in and usurp that.
And I see that
in Christianity. I see that in Islam. I see it in Judaism. It's everywhere. So that's my main.
You don't think they're the same agent? I see them all as the same agent.
The same agent. Well, yeah. I mean, essentially, yes, yeah.
So there's only one. There's only one agent, as far as I can tell, and there might be a whole bunch of fallen angels doing the same thing, but that appears to be the agency. Let me put it another way: the current predicament that we're in, and we've acknowledged a whole bunch of deceit that we're now seeing. That predicament is very consistent with the Bible and the model that we are being deceived by the serpent.
Right. Yeah. I see where you're going. I see where you're going with that. No, that's fine. I don't have any, I'm not going to attack that viewpoint at all just because you're talking about the Bible. That's fine. I'm always learning. I've been looking at crazy, information for too long, or long enough that I've realized that as soon as I believe anything, I'm going to be stuck in a dead end of the labyrinth.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm just open to whatever people have to say, and that's why I like this format so much.
Yes, I do too. It's very good. And what's your website again?
It's at tumblr.com. It's just uninstallmedia.tumblr.com, I think. Yeah. It's just an image blog where I post up pictures. Rarely. There's a few on there now.
That was the sound of my keyboard. Uninstallmedia.tumblr.com?
I think that's it. Yeah, let me just double check. Maybe you'll tell me if that's not right.
No, I can't find that one. There's an Uninstalled Media blogspot.com, but it doesn't have a huge amount in it.
No, you just go Uninstall Media, all one word, lowercase, .tumblr.com. T-U-M-B-L-R.
Oh, there's no E in the Tumblr.
Tango, Utah, Montana, Breckenridge.
No, I was looking for a number, another. I was looking for an E between the L and the R in Tumblr.
Oh, right.
And how did you create those images?
I didn't create any of them. I just saved them from various message boards and websites I look at. And then I tried to pair them up in ways that I thought were slightly referential on a subtle level.
Yeah. And a question I've asked Ab, what do you think is the greatest danger facing America today?
The greatest danger facing America.
The reason I ask is because when I was a child, it was always someone like Jimmy Swaggart saying, the greatest danger facing America today is communism.
Oh, we've had communism, Satanism, jihadism, republicanism. We've had liberalism. What's left? What's the greatest danger facing America? It's probably fakeology, fakeoism. No, I don't know. That's a tough question. The greatest danger face. I think Geraldo Rivera needs to do a special on this because it's a pressing question that we should all be concerned about. What is our greatest danger? What do we want to be scared about when we wake up in the morning? These are important issues.
So, do you think there is a danger? Personally, do you have a view that there is something out there that's dangerous?
Not really. I mean, I've been in jail. I know that that's dangerous. If you're an idiot, that's a dangerous scenario to be in. If you're stupid,
but what happens?
You know, I've been on the streets of, you know, big cities, and they're dangerous if you're an idiot. Everywhere is dangerous if you're stupid. But if you're not stupid, well, then it's just up to you to find, you know, determine what's dangerous or not. And a lot of things are pretty damn safe here in America.
Is it dangerous to talk on FACO?
I doubt it. I don't know. What do you think? Have you experienced danger as a direct result of your interactions with this website?
Absolutely not. But I just wonder why people are very reluctant to associate their identities with what they say here. I always find that an intriguing concept.
Yeah. Well, I kind of view this every website on the internet as a potential honeypot. So I don't really get too attached to any one platform, but this is a pretty good one at the moment.
No, it is. All right, I better go and make some salt.
Well, sounds good. It's been a great chat.
Yeah, no, pleasure to talk to you.
So when you make salt, are you distilling it from ocean water? Or?
I've got a website which tells you exactly what I do. I'll type it here.
Okay, I'll go look at the website.
Actually take crude sea salt and dissolve it in seawater. Then I use an old system that we got from... It was last built in Michigan, I believe, near the sawmills.
Oh, perfect.
But I think the last one was built in Michigan probably in the 40s. So it's a, you know, making salt that way, produced salt that was too good for people.
I've seen the Morton salt plant outside of Salt Lake City, Utah.
So that's what they call a vacuum plant.
Okay, so they just vacuum up the salt lake and filter out the salt.
Not quite. Out of Utah. I wonder what. No, they're sorry. So they just scoop stuff off the Salt Lake, do they?
Yeah. It's
So it'd be interesting to know what they do with that after they scoop it up. How much refining they do, or whether they just package it and sell it, which is probably the best way.
Well, it appears if you drive by on the interstate that goes right past there, it appears that a lot of it sits in a large pile outside of an elevator, just completely exposed to the elements for who knows how long.
Yeah, that's normal, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so it sounds like they just make a normal solar salt.
And then put some iodine in it, I think. That's what Morton does.
The iodine is very important, but it's not put in all salt, I don't think.
Right, no, I use the sea salt, Celtic or Himalayan, whatever kind of sea salt I can get. Because I know about the mineral content, the differential between the minerals of your sea salt and your refined processed salt.
Yeah, they don't have very little salt unless it's iodized. Will have iodine in it. Himalayan salt doesn't have any iodine at all.
So, is that, in your opinion, a crucial component of your salt that you consume?
It's not from salt. Really, people should be adding iodine to their diet. Yeah, I use Lugol solution.
Where does that come from?
You have to buy it, yeah. And it's quite difficult. It used to be available in every chemist across the world, but it's disappeared from most chemist shops.
Huh. It's called Lugol?
Lugol, yeah. So 3 drops of Lugol a day gives you the equivalent to what most Japanese have through their seaweed intake.
Oh, okay.
And, it used to be a the amount of iodine people were getting, say, in when I was a child, is much greater than it is now. And people are suffering as a result of it.
All right. Well, we've covered a lot of topics today and given a lot of ideas for people to pursue if they're so inclined. So thanks again, Frank, and happy salt making to you.
Thanks, man. Au revoir.
Yeah, have a good one. We'll talk to you all later.
Hello, this is Tom Dalper, and you're listening to Fakeologist Radio at fakeologist.com.